Sergeant Alfonso reports that there is a massive build-up of enemy to the west of our lines. It seems that emboldened by their gunships, Frelimo, backed by Zimbabwean contingents, are able to launch a full-scale offensive. We are probably already cut off from the Zimbabwe border. The territory that we once controlled seems certain to have been overrun by the enemy in advance. Within hours it will become a battlefield. Even now, Sergeant Alfonso is fighting his way through and has taken some casualties. I'm afraid you would not last long out there, Colonel. It would be suicide for you to try to reach the border now. You must remain under my personal protection.
What the hell do you want from us? Sean demanded. You're up to something. I can smell the stink of it from here. What is it?
Your lack of confidence in my motives is very distressing. China smiled coldly. However, the sooner the hind gunships are destroyed, the sooner the Frelimo offensive will collapse, and you and Miss Montero will be returned to the civilized world.
I'm listening, Sean told him.
You are the only one, you and Captain Job, who understands the stinger. In this our interests coincide. I want you to train a select contingent of my men to handle the stingers.
That's all you want? Sean stared into his face. We train your men to use the stinger, then you let us go?
Exactly.
How do I know you won't move the goalposts again?
You pain me, Colonel.
Not nearly as much as I'd like to.
It's agreed, then. You will train my men, and in exchange I will have you escorted across the border at the very first opportunity.
What option do we have?
I'm so pleased that you are being reasonable, Colonel. It makes life much easier for all of us.
His voice became crisp and businesslike.
We must begin immediately.
You'll have to let your staff sober up a little, Sean told him. I'll begin first thing tomorrow, and I'll train the Shanganis under Alfonso and Ferdinand, if Alfonso makes it through the Frelimo offensive intact.
How long will it take you?
China wanted to know.
From now on, every hour will be vital to our survival.
They're bright lads and willing. I should be able to do something with them in a week.
You will not have that long.
I'll have the stingers in action just as soon as I possibly can, Sean retorted irritably. Please believe me, General, I don't want to hang around here a minute longer than I have to. Now, we'll bid you good night. He took Claudia's arm as he turned away.
Oh, Sean, she whispered, I have the terrible premonition that we're caught up in something from which we're never going to escape.
And Sean squeezed her upper arm to make her stop.
Look up there, he ordered softly, and she raised her face.
The stars? She asked. Is that what you want me to look at?
Yes, the stars.
They daubed the night as though a gigantic firefly had been crushed to death and its luminous essence smeared across the vault of heaven.
They calm the soul, Sean explained gently.
She breathed softly and deeply. Yes, you're right, my darling. Tonight we have our love. Let's exploit it to the full, and let tomorrow take care of itself. She felt safe and invulnerable under the tented mosquito netting. The lumpy, grass-filled mattress had taken on the shape of their bodies, and she did not notice the harsh touch of the canvas covering against her skin.
If we made love 10,000 times, it would still not have taken the edge off my need for you, she whispered, as she slipped over the edge of sleep.
She woke suddenly, feeling the tension in his body against hers, and instantly he touched her lips to caution her to silence. She lay frozen in the darkness, not daring to move or breathe. And then she heard it. A soft scraping at the entrance of the dugout as the netting curtain was pushed aside and an animal passed through. Her heart raced away and she bit her lip to stop herself gasping aloud as she heard the thing crossing the earth floor towards the bed. Its paws were almost soundless, just the faintest tick of grit compressed by the stealthy weight.
And then she smelt it. The wild, gamey smell of a meat-eating animal, and she wanted to cry out. Beside her, Sean moved suddenly, fast as a striking adder. He lunged through the mosquito net, and there was a quick scuffle and squeal, and she tried to crawl over Sean's back to escape whatever it was.
"Got you, you little bugger," Sean said grimly. "You don't sneak up on me twice and get away with it. Now, tell me I'm getting old and I'll wring your neck."
"You'll be young and beautiful forever, my buona," Matatu giggled and wriggled like a puppy caught by the scruff of the neck.
"Where have you been, Matatu?" Sean demanded sternly. "What took you so long? Did you meet a pretty girl along the way?"
Matatu giggled again. He loved to be accused by Sean of dalliance and amateur exploits.
"I found the roosting place of the Henshaws," he boasted. "The same way I find where the bees have their hive. I watched their flight against the sun and followed them to their secret place."
Sean drew him closer to the bed and took his arm gently. "Tell me," he ordered. And in the darkness, Matatu squatted down and tucked his loincloth between his legs and made little self-important throat-clearing and humming sounds.
"There is a round hill, shaped like the head of a bald man," Matatu began. "On one side of the hill passes the Insimbi, the railway, and on the other side, the road."
Sean propped himself on one elbow to listen, and with his other arm he encircled Claudia's naked waist and held her close. She snuggled against him, listening to Matatu's piping pixie voice in the darkness.
"There are many askari around the hill, with big banduki hidden in holes in the ground."
Sean formed a vivid mental picture of the heavily garrisoned hilltop as Matatu described it to him. Beyond the outer defensive lines, the gunships were lagered in separate sandbagged emplacements. Like battle tanks in hull-down fortifications, they would be impregnable. And yet they had only to rise and hover a few feet above the ground level to bring into action their devastating Gatling cannons and rocket pods.
"Inside the circle of roosting Henshaw, there are many gharries parked, and white men in green clothes who climb on the Henshaw and look inside them all the time."
Matatu described the mobile workshops and fuel tankers and the squads of Russian mechanics and technicians needed to keep the helicopters flying. The training manuals had pointed up the Hinds' excessive requirements of service and maintenance, while those big Isotov turbo engines would guzzle avgas. "Matatu, did you see railway gharries on the line near the hill?" Sean asked.
"I saw them," Matatu confirmed. "Those big, round gharries, full of beer. The men who ride in the Henshaws must be very thirsty."
Once, many years ago, on one of his infrequent visits to the city with Sean, Matatu had seen a beer tanker disgorging its load at the main Harari beer hall. He'd been so impressed that since that day he was utterly convinced that all tankers, of whatever size or type, contained only beer. Sean could not change his mind on this. Matatu would never accept that some of them actually carried less noble fluids, such as gasoline, and he always stared wistfully after any tanker they passed on the road. Sean smiled now in the darkness at the little man's fixation. Fuel for the gunships was obviously being railed from Harare in bulk tankers and transshipped into smaller road tankers. It was ironic that the fuel was almost certainly being originally supplied by the South Africans. However, if the helicopter squadron was storing its fuel within the lager itself, they were taking a grave risk. It was something to bear in mind. Matatu remained at the bedside for almost an hour, while Sean patiently drew from him every possible detail he could of the gunship lager. Matatu was certain that there were 11 helicopters in the emplacements, which tallied with his own estimate. Of the original 12, one had been destroyed in the collision with the Hercules. Matatu was equally certain that only 9 of the gunships were actually flying. Hidden on a nearby kopje, he had watched the helicopter's sortie from their lager at dawn, return for refueling during the day, and at nightfall come in to roost.
Shaw knew that Mutatu could count accurately to 20, but after that he became vague, and any greater number was described progressively as many or a great deal, and finally as like grass on the Serengeti plains. So Shaun was now fairly certain that two of the gunships had broken down and were probably awaiting spares, and he accepted Matatu's figure of 9 operational gunships, still a formidable force, quite sufficient to turn the tide of the looming battle against Renamo, unless they could swiftly be put out of the action. When at last Mutatu had finished his recitation, he asked simply,
"Now, my Bwana, what do you want me to do?"
Shaun considered in silence. There was really no reason why he should not bring Mutatu in from wherever he was hiding up in the bush, allowing him openly to join the force of Shangani under his command as a tracker. However, he sensed that there might be some future advantage in keeping Mutatu hidden from China's cold reptilian gaze. "You are my wild card, Mutatu," he said in English, and then in Swahili, "I want you to keep out of sight. Do not let any of the men here see you, except Job and me."
"I heard you, my Bwana."
"Come to me each night as you have tonight. I will have food for you, and I will tell you what to do. In the meantime, watch and tell me all you see." Mutatu went so silently that they heard only the faint rustle of the netting at the entrance as he passed through.
"Will he be all right?" Claudia asked softly. "I worry about him. He's so cute."
"Of all of us, he is probably the most likely to survive." In the dark, Shaun smiled fondly after the little man.
"I'm not sleepy anymore."
Claudia snuggled against him like a cat. And then, much later, she whispered,
"I'm so glad Mutatu woke us up."
It was still dark when Shaun turned Job out of his blanket the next morning. "We've got work to do," he told him. And while Job laced on his boots, he described his meeting with General China.
"You mean we are now instructors?" Job laughed softly. "All we know about those stingers is what we've read in the manuals."
"That'll have to change," Shaun told him. "The sooner we get the Shanganis into action, the sooner we're going to get the hell out of here."
"Is that what China told you?"
Job raised an eyebrow at Shaun.
"Let's get Ferdinand and his boys cracking," Shaun said brusquely, to cover his own misgivings. "We'll sort them into teams of 2 men, one to serve the launcher and the other to carry the extra missiles. Of course, the number 2 must be able to take over if the leader's put down."
Shaun pulled out his notebook and drew the candle stump closer, writing in its gluttering yellow light.
"When do you expect Alfonso to get here?"
Job stuffed his shirt into the top of his tiger-striped pants.
"Sometime today, if at all," Shaun replied.
"He's the best of the bunch," Job grunted.
"Ferdinand isn't bad," Shaun pointed out, and placed their names at the head of the page as his section leaders.
"Okay, we need 30 names for our number ones. Give me some."
It was like the old days, working together this way, and Shaun found he was beginning to enjoy himself. As soon as it was light enough, they paraded the men who had returned in the Hercules from the Grand Reef raid. With the 2 casualties missing, there remained 18 men under Ferdinand. Shaun immediately gave Ferdinand a field promotion to full sergeant and was rewarded with a huge grin and a flourishing salute that almost swept Ferdinand off his feet with its own vigour. Shaun had to find something to occupy them and keep them out of the way, while he and Job gave themselves a crash course on the Stinger missile system.
"Sergeant,"
Shaun addressed Ferdinand by his rank for the first time, "do you see that hill over there?" It was just visible through the trees, shaded blue with distance.
"Take your men for a run around it and get them back here in 2 hours, weapons and full field packs."
As they watched the column of men doubling away, Shaun said, "If Alfonso and his lads don't arrive by this evening, we'll have to recruit replacements."
"Oh, that's no problem, however. China will be keen to let us have his very best men. At the moment, we are right at the top of his list of favourite flavours."
In the meantime, let's hit those manuals, Job suggested. I haven't swatted since varsity days. I'm not looking forward to it.